Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next. Today, we're going to be talking with two members of the Jericho Road Community Health Center team. Anna Mongo with us, the Chief Program Officer. Magdalena Nichols, Chief Operating Officer. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
What intrigued us and what drew us to bring you guys in, and we do appreciate you taking some time because I know it's very busy for you, but the recent billboard campaign that Jericho Road has been sponsoring, the Love Thy Neighbor campaign. What is behind this campaign? Who wants to tackle that one first and foremost?
I can start. I mean, so it's rooted in the story in the Bible from Luke 10, which is the story of the Good Samaritan, and really what it means to actually love your neighbor. I mean, it depicts the story of a man who was beaten on the side of the road, and multiple people walk past him, and finally a Samaritan, the least potential person who could have potentially stopped to actually address him and take care of his needs at that point. And the idea of does it actually mean to love your neighbor, and who is your neighbor? As a part of that. And so our intentionality in that campaign is to really push us as a community, especially based on where our nation is in this moment, to challenge ourselves to say, who is our neighbor? Which is not people who look like us. It's not people who sound like us. It's not our next door neighbor. It's anyone who has a need that we are called to be kind to and to extend mercy to, and grace and so forth, so on. And so in this moment, in this season, that campaign and the grounding of it in the story of the Good Samaritan is what we've been focused on as an organization.
I think for us, it was a really natural move into sort of that theme, because the organization itself, Jericho Road, is based on that same story. The road that the person was left beaten on was actually the Jericho Road. So this is really a strong part of who we have always been as an organization, is that we always believe that we should find the people who are most vulnerable and stand with them in that moment and figure out ways to provide support. So I think it was a really natural tie-in to the campaign because it's who we are as an agency anyway.
And maybe just to get into it a little specific then. So I know I've seen some of the billboards, different billboards, different people on it. What are we seeing?
So the one that specifically has all the various pictures depict people of different complexions, different religions, and it's all encompassing of our staff. And again, the idea of who your neighbor is anyone. And so we wanted our community to see that Jericho Road often is noted as the organization that is a refugee organization, but we are more than that. We care for Black and Brown communities as much as we care for refugees. And so the idea behind all those various phases is to paint this picture that we are all neighbors to each other, whether I have a hijab on my head and or I'm African American and or I'm Caucasian and I'm from a different nation or whatever the case may be. Our neighbor can look like anyone that we are called to be able to stand in the gap for in this moment, in this season. And so that's the depiction behind those pictures and why the faces are all different complexions and so forth, so on.
The three billboards as a whole, there's three in total. One says, City of Good Neighbors? The other says, Who is my neighbor? And the last one has sort of blank thy neighbor, and it has a variety of terms that you can use to fill in the blank, like empower, clothe, shelter. And on the line itself, it says, Love thy neighbor.
Let's perhaps maybe take this conversation then into the other side of that coin. There's a reason for this billboard. Like you said, it's at this moment. There's a national moment here that is only seems to be getting more and more intensified as the days go on here. But is there, or do you, in this community, a need to have this conversation? You know, I think, you know, a lot of the people who have sat right where you're sitting right now, we've talked to a lot of people who embrace this concept that there are new people, new Americans coming to Buffalo, and what those new Americans have done for Buffalo in the last decade or so. Or, well, I think when you talk about Buffalo, you could be talking about its entire history, really. But yeah. I think we're, you know, we're a little bit more specific about what's, you know, how the world has been changing here. But to that, is there or are, do you hear that other side, that sense that these aren't my neighbors, they don't look like my neighbors? Do you hear those kind of conversations? Do they come your way?
You know, I think especially in this moment, people have been empowered to talk about the flip side of that coin. So I think that is sort of the reality is, yes, we are hearing people say, we don't want refugee resettlement. We don't want immigrants in our community. We don't want this sort of effort to take place in our community. I think what always has given me hope about Buffalo specifically is that, you know, Buffalo is the city of good neighbors. I think Buffalo does recognize as a whole that refugees, immigrants, people that look different than us really have contributed to our economy, really have made a much better place for Buffalo to be. I think there's been a general understanding that, you know, this is part of what's bringing back the population of the city of Buffalo. I mean, multiple people at the last census really attributed the growth in our population to the fact that we have this incoming population, and you need incoming population in a city in order to make a city thrive. So I do think, you know, at all different levels, there is sort of this idea that Buffalo is the city of good neighbors and what that means. And it has been a very welcoming place for sure. I think given the changes in administration, it's about to hit everybody in a very different way than how it's hit people in the past.
Yeah. I think the only thing I'd add to that is that, you know, we do also have a history as a city, right? We are the city of good neighbors, but we do have a history of racial segregation. I mean, I think we were just rated that recently in a recent survey. And so I think conversations like this actually challenge us to look at not only that history, but also where we stand. I think a people who forget their history are doomed to repeat it, essentially. That's what the saying is. And I think our city has an opportunity to continue to be on the forefront of what it actually looks like to love our neighbors. But that does require a little bit of digging back into what our history has been, what some of the surveys have shown at this point. And again, to be able to look past race and immigration status and so forth, so on. I think the notion behind it too also goes beyond refugees. If we are racially segregated in the way that our city has been rated, it goes beyond just refugees. It's Black and brown, it's Hispanics and so forth, so on. And so this campaign is holistic. The idea behind it is to target more than just what's happening in our refugee communities, but also to look at each other. Anna and I are two different complexions and racial backgrounds and so forth, so on. And so it goes beyond just the refugee component and really also looking at our past and what our history has been as a city to really get to a place where we can actually love each other beyond just looking and dividing with refugee versus non-refugee, asylum seeker versus city-born or American-born or whatever the case may be.
I even want to keep jumping on that because I think, you know, we as a city have faced lots of challenges. Mm-hmm. And those challenges, as she said, really go back generations. And we do ourselves a disservice as a city if we only focus on what's happening in this generation, because mm-hmm. there is a context and understanding that really goes beyond, you know, what's been happening in this generation. And when you look at, you know, things like we have an issue with lead pipes in our city, and lead exposure among children, that's not an issue. That's definitely an equity issue, and it's not just a refugee and immigrant okay. issue. It really extends far beyond that, and it really is, you know, zip code by zip code. If you look at health outcomes in, you know, the east side versus the west side versus North Buffalo, you see a picture that's not just, yes, we're racially divided, and there's, you know, a line where it seems, you know, how our city is divided, but it also directly correlates to what health outcomes are, mm-hmm. people's quality of life, who, you know, really faced more challenges than others during the blizzard of 22. Mm-hmm. I mean, it yeah. really was quite clear that these sort of divides in our city directly translate to equity, access, you know, who's addressed first, what services people have access to, what resources, how those resources are distributed across the city. And so I think, you know, as she said, we're very much thought of as immigrant and refugee agency. And I think, you know, we want to say this isn't only that. It sure. certainly is a contributing piece of that. But really, this is a much broader discussion.
I appreciate that. And you brought up three or four issues that I most certainly like to follow up. And I'm glad you brought up the Christmas blizzard of 2022, mm-hmm. because I think so quickly that tragedy became a weather event. We heard about people dying, and it just seemed to kind of just, you know, evaporate into history to a certain extent, mm-hmm. very quickly. But Jericho Road, you're on the front lines. You see, you hear. What did you see? What did you hear? What do you understand about what happened during that blizzard?
I mean, I think some of the things that we heard were feedback from folks like, well, why did people go out? They should have stayed in, and they should have blah, 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 blah. What we learned is a lot of these folks who went out is because they had no choice, right? So you think about someone who is making minimum wage and they're living paycheck to paycheck and the timing of the storm, and they're hearing there's a storm coming, but they don't have enough finances to get to the store to buy the resources that they need. And this is something that a lot of people in our community have missed because they're so focused on the fact that they went out to the store much sooner and so forth, so on, including myself. I was able to get to the store, but a lot of my neighbors were not able to in our community. And when I say neighbors, I'm not even talking about where I live. I'm just talking about people in different communities who are my neighbors that were not able to get to the stores because they did not have the resources to run in advance and get the groceries that they need. And so they try to get out there in advance. And that's not an excuse, nor does it make it okay that they had to pass. But the fact that they had no option but that is a problem in itself. And so I think those are things that we have learned that have been eye-opening for us. And so when you look at the disparity and the number of people that were impacted by that blizzard and why they were impacted, because that's the why is often what people don't ask. It's important because it paints a picture of the continued health inequities in our communities that have not been fully addressed in our community. And it's not just in Buffalo, right? We know across the nation, we also saw this during COVID. It was highly impacting Black and brown communities disproportionately compared to other communities. And so these are the cycles and patterns that we really need to dig into if we are going to really get to a state and a place where people are just healthier across the board, despite what your background is, that people can't access the care that they need. They should be able to access groceries as they need to, and have the resource that they need to be able to get to the store much sooner. So I think that's one thing.
And have a store in their community.
That is true.
And because it was not just an issue of, do I have the money to pay for the groceries? It was an issue of, is there even a grocery store I can get to?
Right. How far will I have to go? And you can't drive.
Right. And I think one of the things that was so surprising to me is that, I mean, I was one of the lucky ones. I feel like I was very traumatized by that storm, and I never lost power. I never lost internet. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't have those things happen, although so many people did. I still couldn't get out of my house for 4 days. And my first option of where I could start to buy food was the corner store around the corner that we could walk to. And, you know, it really raised for me these corner stores and, you know, what food is available at the corner stores and how many people are dependent on those stores because, you know, those are the options that people have. And especially on the east side of Buffalo, there's, you know, really just the Tops Market in a large area. It's considered a food desert. And of course, there's trauma attached to that supermarket.
No doubt.
So, I mean, these are all things that impacted people. Like, not only do I have money to be able to pay for groceries ahead of time, but is there even a grocery store I can get to?
Yeah.
And it's shocking to me that in a city of our size, we're still asking that question and it still isn't addressed.
Let's stick with the why. I really liked what you said there, Magdalena, about that. There was this storm quickly, and again, well, of course you should have stayed inside. But why? Why did people leave their homes? Let's get into maybe that as, like you said, and a broader discussion about those whys, those things that we don't, that don't seem to make it to the surface of the conversation when we're talking about health equity in the city of Buffalo. What else are we missing in that picture?
Mm-hmm. You want to add more context to that one?
You can go ahead.
So, I mean, external to the issues that we see even with pay inequities, right? A lot of the folks in these communities are working very minimum wage jobs. Access to public transportation, a continued access to public transportation. I think even when we think about it from a perspective of healthcare, you know, Dr. Glick was sharing a story with us recently of a patient who came super late. They went to one of our location, the wrong location, and he was trying to get them to come to Barton, and they were on the east side of Buffalo. But they don't have transportation. And so it was going to take them about an hour and some change to get to Barton from the east side of Buffalo. That's another reason why.
Which is a 10-minute drive if you have a car.
Right, right.
Really easy drive. Yeah. And so things like transportation impact people's ability to be able to have the access that they need. I think Anna brought up a point about housing. You know, lead piping is just one of the issues in the housing market in Buffalo, external to the cost, right? And so you're living, so you're making a minimum wage, living paycheck to paycheck in a house that probably is not ideal for most people across the board, may not have insulation, so forth, so on, at a higher rate. I mean, I was talking to my sister recently, who's a single parent, and she lives in a fairly decent house, pays rent, but her rent is the same amount as my mortgage. And it just gives me pause when I think about things like that. And she's paycheck to paycheck. And so those are those whys that folks don't always dig into when they look at the bigger picture, what's impacting our community and why there are these health disparities across the board. And then you have to think about the generational cycles of a systemic poverty that are also in these communities that are not really fully addressed, right? So building, and this is no criticism to the efforts that have been made, because any effort is good effort. But what are we doing to actually address those systems that actually create this perpetual system of poverty that leads to continued perpetual health inequities in our communities across the board? I'm going to pause there because I'm getting excited. I'm going to turn it over to Anna if she wanted to add anything. But those are things that we don't think about or talk about enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also, you know, this question. I remember, you know, before the storm, there was a child that was actually passed away due to the fact that the mother was pushing a stroller down the middle of the street in the winter. And it kind of comes to bear that the reason she had to do that was because the sidewalks weren't shoveled, they weren't repaired. And there has been some repair that has happened since then, but a lot of repair has not happened since then. And, you know, we look at things that cause barriers to people. And I think it's easy to say, oh, you know, my sidewalk was repaired. That must have happened everywhere. And, you know, not even necessarily see it as a barrier that impacts people's daily lives and impacts their ability to go different places and do different things. And when you're living paycheck to paycheck, like, you are very much making that decision. Is it more important to me to pay my car insurance or pay my rent? Is it more important to, you know, get a bus pass or, you know, go to the grocery store? Yeah. It really impacts your decisions, especially when you're not just taking into account the amount of money that it costs to do those things. You're taking into account the amount of time that it takes to do those things and whether or not it's actually feasible to be able to balance both things.
And when, you know, we started this program talking about the Jericho Road Community Health Center, and it's, while refugees are welcome, well, you most certainly are caring for refugees and other individuals. At the same time, this is a place for everybody. So you see everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do we learn from the people that we see at Jericho Road?
You know, it's such an interesting question because, you know, I spent the last almost 20 years at Jericho Road. And to me, what I see is strength and resilience. I see people who, you know, are working really hard to make a better life for themselves, to make a better life for their children, who are, you know, focused on getting by and face some serious challenges. But I see hope. I've always seen hope. And I see that really across the vast majority of the patients that we serve. I think to some extent that's what makes us feel like we can keep going. I've seen, you know, the amount that investment in some of these areas and positive investment, how quickly that can radically change, you know, what's going on in a community in a positive way.
You intrigue me with that. I'll just follow up then. You're saying positive investment. What are we talking about there? If you could expand on that, please.
So, I mean, just a place like Jericho Road, if you just consider our Barton office, and maybe I'll talk about Broadway a little bit too. But I remember that when I first came to the West Side as, you know, an outsider, pretty naive 20 years ago, I was afraid to walk outside at night. I am not afraid to walk outside at night now. I see, you know, COVID did kind of impact things in a negative way. But if you really looked, you know, pre-COVID, you saw Grant Street that was coming back economically. You're seeing now Niagara Street that's really coming back economically. You're seeing, you know, there's a lot of job availability on the West Side that didn't exist prior to that, not only because we at Jericho Road have jobs, but as other, you know, businesses, you know, opportunities come into the West Side, that those opportunities exist for people not only to live positively, but as a community to see real community change and real community growth in a way that is positive. I see less empty buildings. I see more businesses. I see a community where I'm not afraid to, you know, walk to the corner store at 7 o'clock at night because, you know, it got dark early.
Right.
Those are all positive changes. Those are all changes that happened in the last, you know, 15 years.
Yeah. I would echo Anna's wording on the notion of hope. You enter any one of our waiting rooms, whether it's on the east side or the west side of Buffalo, you see hope, right? On the west side, while we see an integration of different folks that we serve, our staff is also pretty diverse as well.
Yes, Jane, could take a look at your webpage.
You could probably find a country at Jericho Road represented in one of our staff members, right, if it's not in one of our patients. But you can also find somebody that looks like somebody in the community. And so we want to perpetuate the notion of hope. I think a story that comes to mind for me was specifically for the east side of 1021 Broadway, when we built the fitness center. And the idea of having a fitness center on the east side of Buffalo, because there's not anything like that, because, you know, a lot of providers will talk to their patients about being healthier. We know that a lot of the comorbidities that you see with these communities are high cholesterol, diabetes, obesity, so forth, so on. And so to build a fitness center on the east side of Buffalo that is also affordable, because it's one thing to build it and then it not be affordable,
right,
but that's also affordable for family members to be able to come so that they don't have to say, well, I couldn't walk outside because it wasn't safe or it was too cold or whatever the case may be, was a big deal for us as an organization. And I remember someone, when we did the ribbon cutting, I won't even shame the person, but I remember them walking in and being surprised to see a fitness center that had brand new equipment.
That was nice.
And I remember Dr. Glick saying, well, why is it a surprise? And that's resonated for me, because it's one thing to invest and not fully invest to be able to then just say, well, we've done this thing and folks should be happy. But it's a whole different thing to invest in the way that you would want it for yourself, which would even take me back to the story of the Good Samaritan, the idea of loving thy neighbor. The idea of it is to love them as you would love yourself. And so what would be the point of us building a fitness center that we ourselves
that was subpar.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I think investments like that give people a level of excitement. I remember talking to some of the community members who came and they were excited. Not only was it a great gym, but they can afford it.
And
you know?
Get to it.
Yeah, and get to it. And the fact that location is also on a bus stop just makes it that much better. But investments like that bring hope, that are also the best that we can give in a way that we would want it for ourselves, is critically important. So when I think about hope, that's what I think about when I look at Barton, I look at Broadway. And obviously we're not the only organization doing stuff like that, but that's what hope should look like.
Even at Broadway, you know, where we're located is next to other nonprofits. There's several nonprofits that intentionally located in the building. The building itself is four stories, and it's actually three separate buildings, sort of all intertwined internally, and it's right next door to the Broadway Market. So if you think about, that was an empty warehouse And now we have, I don't know, maybe 50 or 70 staff members there, and five other nonprofits that are on the fourth floor have that many. Other businesses have now moved into the building to kind of capture on that. But now what you also have is maybe 300 people that some of them need lunch every day. Right. They're going to walk over to the Broadway Market. Now suddenly you're starting to generate more of a pool of people who are going to start using the Broadway Market, which isn't just an investment in our clinic and in sort of opportunity to the community, but it increases the economic
impact
on the community.
And just to follow up, it's a kind of a maybe a little too specific in some ways, but it's just a, I always find it fascinating to kind of bring this out. Like you said, here's this community, this workout space that is, like you said, a place that I would want to be in, right? You know, it's not just, well, here's a couple of pieces of equipment or here's some music. At the same time, you said you're on the bus stop. Are you seeing people finding their way there, going through these efforts to take part in that?
Absolutely. I mean, we've done like a, we did like a relaunch of the gym, and a lot of the community members came out, and that was a lot of the feedback, just the continued excitement that they can access it so easily through the bus route. If they're already a patient in the area, and or if they're not a patient, that they can access that fitness center. And that was the whole idea behind the advertising around it, the rebranding of it, the relaunching of the fitness center, so that we can make it welcoming for everyone. So we've heard that feedback directly from the community.
It's been interesting. I was a pretty avid user of the gym when it first opened. I actually had my whole weight loss kind of unexpected journey myself as a result from that. And, you know, people tend to work out at the same time. They tend to, you know, be in the same space in a pretty consistent timing. And I ended up sort of with this whole community of people. I'm from the west side. I was working out on the east side. I had this whole group of women that don't look, they weren't my age, they weren't my normal community. And we were like best friends cheering each other on every day. You know, some of us were working on weight. It's also a PT facility. So some of them were actually working on their mobility. And, you know, it really was sort of this unique space that I loved. I was taken by surprise. It's a beautiful space.
Yeah, I don't want to overwhelm the space with more and more people. Is it open to public?
It is open to the public.
Wow. Interesting. I'll be getting more specifics after we take this break here. We'll come back with more. We're talking with Anna Mongo and also Magdalena Nichols of Jericho Road Community Health Center. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Do you rely on WBFO's What's Next for conversations that matter to our region?
A predominantly white area that transitioned to a predominantly black area that now is transitioned to a predominantly Bangladesh area. You know, there's a lot of those nationalities, and it's a blended community.
Protect this program and others by signing up for Protect My Public Media. Visit protectmypublicmedia.org today and make your voice heard.
Why choose public media? Because it's more than TV or radio. It's a connection. A way to learn, to be inspired, to share stories, and to have important conversations. Whether it's trusted local news, breathtaking documentaries, or concerts from around the world, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is here for you. Visit WNED.org to learn about all we have to offer.
This is Jack Cruiser with the scoreboard on WBFO. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of the scoreboard at WBFO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. Our guests today from Jericho Road Community Health Center, Anna Mongo, Chief Program Officer, Magdalena Nichols, Chief Operating Officer. Anna, you're saying before about the Barton Street location, the West Side. As a matter of fact, this particular organization, Western New York Public Broadcasting, we had a facility. I think we still have an antenna over there on Barton Street. but to that, you brought up something like how things have changed for you in 20 years. And I've used this anecdote a few times on this program, but I'm going to use it again. I went to Buffalo State. I was a commuter from the suburbs. And back in my day, 40 years ago, 40 more than years ago, there was a toll over on the 190. So, you know, a young college student, I wanted to avoid the toll. So I got off on Niagara Street and I drove up Plymouth Avenue. On the way home, I drove back on west. And I got to see the West Side 40 years ago. 20, maybe 10, 15 years later, I go back and the West Side is totally different. It had been like families and neighborhoods, and now places are boarded up and it doesn't look like a safe, doesn't feel like a place I should really be driving for shortcuts. Then, in the last 10 years or so, that has changed dramatically. And I've always credited it to the refugee resettlement in the West Side and really turning around that neighborhood. Let's talk about that a little bit, about the fabric of the neighborhood and how it is right now. I mean, I guess that's my anecdote. If you want to back it up or add to it, that's fine. But I'd just like to talk about the West Side neighborhood right now.
Sure. I would also like to say I feel like my mom and dad both have stories of how they avoided the tolls on the 190. I feel like that's a very traditional Buffalo thing to do, is that everybody had their ways of avoiding the tolls on the 190.
A quarter of what used to break me back in 1980.
But yeah, I mean, when I, you know, first moved to the West Side, I think my parents were very stressed out and worried. And I moved into an apartment. I very quickly got some roommates and whatever, and we were sharing that space. I think that made them feel a little bit better. And across from where I was living was School 19, was a corner store, and was a 5-apartment building that actually was primarily refugees that lived in that apartment. Mm. That corner has drastically changed now. But one of the things that I remember from all that time ago is at the time, the people who lived in that apartment were several Cuban families. Mm. And I just loved them. It was not uncommon that if they didn't think I'd parked appropriately, that they would come over and knock on my door and tell me that I was too far away from the curb and that I needed to try again. All those things made me feel safe, though, because what makes you feel safe is your community and the people around you that are looking out for you at any given moment. I think, you know, the West Side, as different people have moved in, as, you know, the refugee community is coming in, it's always a community I have felt very comfortable in and among. And I think, you know, when you talk about those boarded up buildings, there was a time before COVID when almost none of those buildings were boarded up.
Right.
And they were actually mostly businesses that were run by immigrants and refugees who were providing, you know, traditional food or traditional items and that kind of thing to their communities. And I think, I mean, it's still true. You hear a lot about fires in vacant properties across the city. But I think, you know, in fact, that's what happened to that 5-apartment building that was directly across, as it eventually burned down. But you know, it's a problem with empty buildings. It's a problem because it does, in some ways, become a fire hazard or just kind of a blight on that community. And I think with the refugee community primarily having been resettled for a long, long time on the West Side of Buffalo, it started to become that people wanted to buy those properties, wanted to fix them up, wanted to make them look nice so that they could rent them out to people. And even just on my block, we went from having probably 5 or 10 empty buildings. Okay. And I think now there's one. And I will also say on my block itself is almost completely owner occupied. There are some where it's like the owner lives downstairs and the tenant lives upstairs. Mm-hmm. You know, that has always been a strategy of Buffalo. It's interesting to me. It was actually part of in the 70s with the steel mills, where they were sort of intentionally making these double houses that could be owner occupied and then bring a little extra income in for people through tenancy. That's still true. And, you know, the refugee community comes in with lots of skills as far as, or immigrants, not just refugees, but
sure.
coming in with lots of skills on how to fix things up. And it really has transformed the face of my neighborhood.
I'm curious, and I'm sure both of you have had these conversations, but maybe we can get into it a little bit. You've lived the experience, Anna. You know, you came in, you're, you know, a little nervous about your surroundings, and now it sounds like it's very, very much home. I would suggest that there are a lot of people in this region, probably could say maybe across the country, but we'll stick with our little region here just to try to keep this conversation simpler, that could benefit from similar experiences and understand what is really happening, what people are really like. What about those conversations? Have you had those? What do you see that hits home, and you know, what do you see that, you know, maybe needs to be discussed more?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. Something that I've read recently in scripture, and I've heard Dr. Glick talk about as our leader, is the importance of having proximities to suffering. And I think that could look differently, right? I think we don't have enough folks who are exposed to the suffering to fully then be able to advocate and speak on these things. Like, you don't have to personally experience it to get out there and understand what's happening. So like, when I think about you talking about your drive and going through the west side of Buffalo, that gives you a level of proximity to what's happening. I think when you look at the various nonprofit organizations that we have within our community, taking care of the various communities that we're being called to take care of right now, whether it be refugees, whether it be individuals on the east side of Buffalo, the more proximal you become to the suffering of the people, the better of a perspective you have and how you can advocate and support and so forth, so on. And we've been very blessed to be able to have various foundations and individual donors support our work. And that's a blessing in itself, but you get a totally different perspective when you actually get close to it. And so I think a lot of times when I listen to Anna talk and a lot of our leaders, including Dr. Glick, I get to see and hear firsthand what a different perspective we have, because not that it's a blessing that people are suffering, but it's a blessing that we have that proximity, because it keeps our perspective clear. It keeps our mind focus on what the mission is that we've been called to serve in this moment and beyond as a part of the process. So I think that is an opportunity that our community has, our region has, intentionally getting out there to become proximal to where the suffering is, so they have a full perspective of what's happening. I think, you know, not to get national, but even I think what's happening in the nation, you know, not enough people know what's happening. And so I was telling my siblings this, that I used to be a hide my head under the pillow type of a person.
Okay. I find that hard to believe.
Yeah. Specifically like with the news.
Okay,
sure. And really wanting to be immersed in there. Years ago, I've since grown from that. I've become this advocate that I didn't even know was in there. But not wanting to be in that, because I don't want to hear all that suffering. I don't want to feel that suffering. And there's something different about understanding what's happening, not just here in our region, but across the nation. Like, I paid attention to what happened in our region, but not always fully paid attention to what's happening in the nation and the world. But that all has a ramification, a chain reaction. So we need to be able to, from a regional perspective, those of us that are here, be able to get proximal to the suffering. From a national perspective, watch what's happening in our nation, and also watch what's happening in the world, because that suffering is something you can't hide from. And the more proximal you are to it, the better you understand it, and the more equipped you are to actually dive into how you can support it intentionally. And sometimes that goes beyond resources. I'm going to pause there. I'm getting.
No, you're doing fine.
I'll turn it over to Anna.
Take a drink of water.
I just feel like there's two different directions to go with
sure.
this to some extent, because, you know, when you think about what she says about proximity, and we talked about the blizzard, and people said, well, why did they leave the house? If you don't have the proximity to know why people were forced to leave the house, which you might not have if you don't live in the city and understand, you know, why that became the case. So, I mean, I think that question of proximity is so important to ask yourself, because I do think that when your own situation is maybe not at risk or not as significantly at risk as what other people's may be, it's easy to forget that there is a context, there is a reason, there is a question that's much deeper. Those whys, you forget the whys. Mm-hmm. you know, the other way to go is that, you know, so many of the issues that we're dealing with now, like the issue of immigration, the issue of healthcare, the issue, these are not partisan issues. Mm-hmm. These are issues that impact every one of us. And I, you know, returning the conversation to a place where we can actually talk about it, I think is important. Yeah. Because in some sense, we've become so polarized that we're unable to have the conversation. And I mean, I hesitate to admit this, but I'm not always right. I do need other people's perspective. I do need a conversation. And I think in this particular moment where everybody, not everybody, but where it almost feels like it's become Democrats think this way and Republicans think that way. Mm-hmm. Is a really unfortunate place because it closes conversation. It closes the idea that we can respectfully talk about issues that people come at from different perspectives. And, you know, particularly with immigration, you know, the refugee program has always been bipartisan. And actually the 1980 changes that happened to the program were introduced by Republicans who saw it as really, you know, generating our economy. It's sort of taken on a different tone now. And, you know, obviously it's kind of thought about as the Democrats think this and the Republicans think this and everybody who fits in this category is this one thing. And I think that is dangerous. And so I think opening the conversation of who is your neighbor and what do these things really mean and exposing yourself to enough true information that you can have a conversation and be willing to hear another perspective becomes really important.
I like what you said, true information. There's nothing beats firsthand experience when it comes to true information. So you want to see it, touch it, you know, hear. In this region, again, is there, and we talked, you mentioned segregation early on, Magdalena. Is it, are we still too segregated where our region isn't, you know, those walls are still, for whatever reason, imaginary or whatever, are too thick that are really holding us back?
I believe so. I mean, I think if you look at, you know, again, things like as recent as what happened with the 2022 blizzard, if you look at what happened in 514 around the identification of the food desert, like that speaks to the fact that we are still very segregated, because I know if I go to a different community and different neighborhood in our region, that it looks different. And so that in itself already paints that picture. Like, you don't have to dig too far to see that we are still segregated to some extent, because resources are going to some communities and not all the communities in our region. And so I think it speaks for itself when you look at where the suffering is, when you look at the impact of health inequities in our community, it still speaks to the fact that we have a lot of segregation within it. Otherwise, there would be more resources. So we don't have to have things happening like 514 happened and then there's no food access and there's transportation that the community needed to get to another top supermarket to be able to have food. And this happened and we talked about it in that moment, but there's still not enough supermarkets on the east side of Buffalo. It does take me back to, because every time I drive through the east side, I look at the corner stores. I'm grateful that they're there, but I'm also disappointed that that's the only option that's available. Yeah. There's been a lot of movements made, obviously, to integrate healthier food options into some of them, but there's not enough of that. And the cost of things are much higher. And so you are seeing people going to the store. Like, I can't tell you the number of times I've driven through and there's people that are carrying grocery stores, or they're carrying bags from the grocery stores. And I know the options aren't always the healthiest either. And so you're paying much higher. You're trying to use as limited dollars that you have, because you can't go and do a full grocery shopping trip. It's the most accessible location. And a lot of them are not, they're not in the best condition either. And so when I think about things like that, it bothers me, because that shouldn't be the way that we are operating right now. And so I guess I'm just adding a little more to your question, but I believe it goes without saying that I do believe that we are still segregated. Otherwise, we would not be seeing some of these inequities that we're seeing in our healthcare system, some of these divisions as it pertains to whether you voted red or blue. And I wanted to just add a little bit more to Anna's feedback. I think it's such a distraction that we are so caught up in what divides us rather than what unites us in this moment. Because if we come together, I mean, we have an opportunity as a people at the human level to come up with solutions that help everybody if we think about it from a perspective of how would I want to be treated, love my neighbor the way I would want to love myself, that level of mindset should unite us as a region, as a nation, because the human level is what matters, not those things that divide us as a whole. And it just sets us backwards, as again, as a nation, as a region, as a whole. So those are the things I think about, just piggybacking off your, what you
appreciate
actually, and I just said.
All right. Let's take one more time out. We'll come back with our final parts of this conversation. And I'd like to see about your personal dealings with those silos of political perspective. Maybe you've had some conversations that might be enlightening here as we wrap up our time here. We're talking with Anna Mongo and Magdalena Nichols of Jericho Road Community Health Center. This is What's Next on WBFO.
At Buffalo Toronto Public Media, we're committed to serving our entire community. Whether you're listening to investigative journalism on WBFO, enjoying world-class performances on WNED Classical, discovering new local artists on WBFO The Bridge, or immersing yourself in mysteries on WNED PBS. Public media has something for everyone. Explore programs that matter to you at WNED.org. This is Public Media.
Celebrate the 50th anniversary season of Austin City Limits. Don't miss remarkable performances from Gary Clark Jr., Black Pumas, Brittany Howard, and more. Watch every Monday at 10 p.m. on WNED PBS.
WBFO's Disabilities Beat helps us understand our community's challenges.
I don't think that people understand how exhausting it is to be disabled because you're fighting on so many fronts all the time just to exist.
Sign up for Protect My Public Media to ensure initiatives like this remain strong. Go to protectmypublicmedia.org today and make your voice heard.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next in our final minutes here with Anna Mongo and Magdalena Nichols of Jericho Road Community Health Center. Both of you in our last segment kind of touched upon this a little bit, but you know the silo existence that we have right now of opinions, of political opinions, and how there's not a lot of solutions that we're looking for that seem to cross those barriers. Your work is obvious, what you do at Jericho Road and the constituents that you have, but have you had those conversations? Have you had those conversations with people who aren't necessarily interested in being close or having proximity to suffering? And how have those conversations gone? Have you had those? I'm just curious. I'd like to hear if you have any examples.
Yeah, I mean, we've started some of these conversations. One of the things that we did recently was invite the church community to join us in this conversation of what it looks like to love our neighbors and how you have that conversation, even in your congregations, because all the congregations are even divided. And we're supposed to be united under Christ. And so we're inviting people to have these conversations very intentionally in this moment. We've been having those conversations with our staff as well on why we've done the billboard campaign, and then inviting people to have those conversations with each other as a part of the process. I think as a leadership team, I think we talk about it in different ways together as a team under Dr. Glick's leadership, and then also with each other as a part of the process. I think a common theme that has come up with the leaders that I've been engaging in, both the ones reporting to me and my peers, is just the idea and notion of us not getting so caught up in being distracted in this moment, in this season. There's so much that's happening that when you get stuck in that thing, whether it's an executive order or this thing came down the pipeline, that you get so stuck on there that you miss the bigger picture, right? And when you miss that bigger picture, it takes you down a pathway, then you become a part of the very issue that you are trying to resolve. And so we have welcomed these conversations very intentionally. I think we're all doing it in different ways in this season, but we have been very intentional about how we're going about it in this moment. And so, again, we've started off with inviting our church community, different churches across the board that represent different congregations, to open up the dialogue and then charge
City
them.
City and suburbs, yeah?
Yep.
Okay.
And then charge them to then take it to their congregation and have that conversation. And so we've actually seen some fruit from that, some productivity from it. One of our church partners actually talked about it during their, a suburban church, talked about it during one of their services, and it intrigued some congregation members to say, hey, I want to learn more about it. And so those are the type of things that we want to create. And then that should then create a chain reaction within them and then in the communities that they represent that goes beyond their church. So it's a real opportunity to have these conversations.
I think it's important to us, too, to say this isn't because we want you to help Jericho Road, mm-hmm. or we want the church to help Jericho yep. Road, or we want the community to help Jericho Road. It's not about that for us at all. We want people to say, what is my role in all of this, mm-hmm. and what are the steps that I can take in this, and how does this impact, you know, my life, my future? And, you know, for me, it's working at Jericho Road. It's, you know, advocating in a lot of different places. It may take someone in a completely different direction. And that's what we want. We want people to think and then do what's right for them and their lives. And, you know, Jericho Road can't do everything. Yeah. So we want people out there doing things that are, you know, part of this effort, but are not the specific thing that we're doing.
Yeah. Anna just reminded me of one additional thing I wanted to add. An important part of this moment in this season is, you know, people are looking for answers. And even us as an organization, we don't have all the answers. But it's important to have the conversation and then do a reflection and then ask yourself, what are you being called to do in this moment, whether it's at the individual level and or at the organizational level or church or whatever the group is that you represent. But we all have a responsibility in this season, in this moment, to actually sit back and reflect and then discern what direction we're being directed in to do our part to truly demonstrate loving our neighbor in this moment.
Mm-hmm. We've mentioned him so many times throughout the program. Dr. Glick, Dr. Myron Glick, the founder of Jericho Road, was on the earlier iteration of this program when it was called Buffalo What's Next. I would invite any of our listeners, if they didn't hear that show, if you want to hear an inspirational hour conversation, that particular program was just that. It's online at WBFO.org. All right. Here we are. We're coming down to our last couple of minutes. What can people do now? What, you know, we've somewhat brushed upon it, but what can people do? What a call to action. I think anybody who's listened to this and listened to our conversation about, you know, hopefully we've been able to break down some misconceptions, but at the same time, you know, there's an opportunity here perhaps for people to, if nothing else, learn more
Absolutely.
About what is real here in Western New York and in the city of Buffalo, but also maybe how they can help their neighbor.
Yep, absolutely. I guess I can jump in as you want to go. I think, you know, Anna alluded to, like, we're not doing this because we're looking for resources and so forth. So, I mean, if those things come, it's going to be a blessing, but we're not doing this for that. What people can do in this moment, or what we're seeking to have people do, is to have the courage to stand up in this moment. It does not mean that they're not going to have fear as a part of that process, but join us hand in hand to lock arms and really demonstrate what it looks like to love our neighbors. Some tangible things that they can do as a part of that is getting proximal to the suffering. Really tangible, really easy. We have more than enough nonprofits in our community that you can find one. You can reach out to Jericho.
So you don't have to go to Jericho Road.
Have to go to Jericho. There's plenty of nonprofits doing this work in different ways to really get close to the suffering. Whether you look at the east side of Buffalo or the west side of Buffalo, there's more than enough. And I mean, I can name a few off the top of my head, but there's plenty of organizations that you can reach out to. There's a lot of organizations that were formed after the 514 tragedy. Reach out to some of those organizations, learn more about the work that they're doing on the east side of Buffalo and how you can get involved as a volunteer and advocating as a part of that process. I think it's important that courage is an action, right? And so that can come in different ways. I think oftentimes people feel like the only action that they can take is to give money, and sometimes they don't always have money. I think there are things that you can do, like, again, praying for these organizations, advocating for them. Advocating is through your words. you know, if there's misconceptions about what these organizations are doing and the type of folks that they are taking care of, it's an opportunity to speak into them. And the only way you can do that is to actually learn it. So that's a free action you can take, right? You don't have to pay to learn about what Jericho Road does or what all these other organizations do. You don't have to pay to advocate and correct someone in a room as a part of that process. And so I think those are easy, small, tangible things that you can do to be a voice of courage in a moment where our nation is divided. And I would also say you don't have to be caught up in the division in this moment, in this season. Yes, we have different perspectives. Yes, we have different backgrounds, but we have more in common from a human perspective than what we have that divides us. And so if you cut me and you cut Anna and we cut you, we're all going to bleed red. And that's what we need to remember in this moment. We don't have to feed into it. And that's free. It's not gonna cost us anything to stand and to speak up in these moments together as a team, as a human being at the human level. And I think that's critical in this moment.
Well stated, and I think those are going to be our final words. Well done for sure. Anna Mongo is the Chief Program Officer at Jericho Road Community Health Center. Magdalena Nichols, the Chief Operating Officer. Thank you so much for your time, your perspective, and best of luck in this moment.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work, of course, here in the city of Buffalo. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.